This is the May 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Ellen Dearden joins us from AgriView in Morton, Illinois. And Dan O'Brien from Kansas State Extension is with us. He is in Colby, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Let's get a list of items we should probably discuss for the day. I think, Ellen Dearden, I'll start with you today.
I'd like to know whether the corn low is in. I mean, we've put in a four-week high during the market session on Thursday, and it looks like we could end the month up a little bit, too. So are we ready for that seasonal rally?
Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing, your list, please.
Yeah, Todd. I mean, certainly we want to look at the seasonal lows and where we're at. And I think what we want to do is weigh those in light of what we know about what's going on, not only with the general macroeconomic theme that certainly affects ethanol and ethanol usage within our ag sector, but also with the Chinese, you know, trade deal in light where we're at with negotiation. There's been a lot of tit for tat and back and forth this week as China has moved to further impede on Hong Kong's independence and I guess angered the Trump administration in doing so. So certainly that's a part of the mix and will have some effect on where we go forward. I think also the U.S. corn acreage debate is hot and heavy right now as to what that final planting number may be and how many acres we may shave off of that initial USDA projection.
And Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension.
Well, I think I can contribute on in looking at the ethanol market, particularly the trends in prices, both for ethanol received and what they're paying for corn inputs at the plants, GDGs as well. And we have been looking at some numbers on profitability. Of course, the thing that we're watching will be the weekly reports from EIA in terms of ethanol production stocks. And I think for the corn supply-demand balance sheet and grain sorghum to some degree, the outcome of the profitability, the restarting of big parts of the ethanol industry have a lot to do with carryover effects on corn and other commodities.
Dan, I'd like to start with you and let you tell the folks, because this is the first time you've been on Commodity Week, though you're on our daily program, the Closing Market Report, at least once a month, talking about agricultural energies. That happens on a Tuesday afternoon. In fact, it happened this particular week. But why don't you give me kind of your background, what you do there at K-State Extension?
Well, I focus on grain markets. Here in Kansas, we have corn, wheat, soybeans in the east more so, and then, of course, grain sorghum, and pay attention to supply, demand, and price issues there. A lot of what we do, I think, has to do with looking at Western Corn Belt basis trends, just to see how we're standing up relative to other parts of the state, of the nation. And so we're involved in all of those, although we're not talking about today so much. Pay a lot of attention to wheat, and with hard red winter wheat crop in its current state, and with hot weather coming up in the next couple of weeks, right during a really critical time, it'll be an interesting and potentially dicey time for that crop.
We'll all three ask you a few questions here, including Dave and Ellen, but I would like to follow up on the hard red winter wheat and the condition it is in Kansas. You had a wheat tour recently. I'd like to know what happened with that. It was a virtual tour, which was interesting, and it was following up, of course, on some freeze conditions that took place earlier in the season. What did they find?
Well, so far, if the outcome matches what we think we saw, the fear of freeze conditions were I would not say they were overblown, but the crop immediately after had some cool weather, secondary growth came on, et cetera. So the risk of a wipeout freeze seemed to be mitigated somewhat. As soon as I say that, we'll have to eat those words. But really, the freeze had some impact. But what we're more concerned about now is encroaching dryness coming into the western part of the state, especially southwest Kansas. So we've had dry conditions and now with heat coming on during critical, critical production, late stages of production. We have uncertainty, frankly, in that. And I think with what you see in the futures in the last day or so, with some moves higher with this higher temps coming on, that I think that's indicating some worry in that direction. So I'm not trying to beat the drum for higher wheat prices, but we have some questions right now. And then weather conditions, both dryness coming into this and also high temps are going to, I guess, put us at the place of having to answer what we really think about production prospects in the next 1 or 2 weeks.
Ellen Dearden from AgriView, do you have a question for Dan O'Brien?
I do. With the improved basis for Milo, do you anticipate seeing more Milo acres seeded this spring than usual?
2 weeks ago, yes. why do I say 2 weeks ago? Without question, in the midst of all the questions, all the issues that we're going to talk about here in terms of expectations for corn acres in Kansas, if we're not planting corn, well, where do we go? It's either soybeans or grain sorghum, and the grain sorghum basis again has been very positive. If you look at our local basis trends, it's not just a little bit better. It's a 45 degree angle to the high side with, 50 cents more or better than any previous basis we've seen the last several years. So good news on the grain sorghum export side, and notable jumps week to week, literally in the USDA reports. So your question was, are we going to see grain sorghum substitute in for corn acres? And I think that in Kansas, under irrigation, you're still going to see most of those folks because of the potential response of irrigated corn to water availability. A lot of them will probably have stayed with corn with their eye firmly on the safety net, 388 planting price up front for crop insurance, a 370 reference price on the back end for ARC PLC, for PLC in ARC County. So I get the impression and that we're probably staying pretty firm on corn. There'll be some switching. What I haven't heard, and we all watch the markets. Maybe I've missed it, but I have not heard of many reports yet of seed being turned back in and people rushing around to buy this or that. So if there is some switching, some of the normal signals that we're looking for haven't been, they're of course nowhere near last year's panicky moves, but I haven't heard, at least in my part of the country, of a lot of drive to move it, to switch crops. And just bring up the last part of that, the U.S. I recall all last year we were thinking, gosh, the USDA has to drop those numbers. They have to change this. And they were reticent all the way through to make any changes. So come to the end of June on that acreage report, it'll be really interesting to see where the planted numbers come out at. And I'd have full expectation would be 2.5 million acres lower. And that's what I'd expect. But what I don't know is the thought processes of the USDA and how they'll represent it.
Dave Chatterton, do you have a question for Dan?
Yeah, Dan, I guess I'm curious, and this is a little bit of a selfish question, but in regards to Milo and the genetics and the farmer's choice going forward, I guess I have a two-pronged question. One, I'm curious about how this litany of government support programs apply to sorghum. We spend our focus, here in the Midwest more on row crops and the corn and the soybeans, but whether it's WIP Plus or MFP or EIDL or particularly the Corona food aid package, and even a PLC calculation, I'm curious how that may look to you versus the switching argument that we've had. And I'm also curious about the genetics that we see. And I know that within the last 2 to 3 years, I've grown Milo on my own farm in Northeast Missouri and had unfortunately pretty poor results and haven't been able to get the yield increase that we would like to see it, and stay relative to corn as far as what our per acre P&Ls look like. So I'm curious if you might have a comment on that.
Yeah, several aspects to that. I think the support for crop insurance. I believe, off the top of my head, I think they'll take that 388 that we have for the planting price. I think they take 95% of that for the crop insurance number. So, you know, 5% less of 388. You want to trust but verify, but it's either 100% or 95% of that price. So still a pretty decent price, is at 350, something like that. But then the reference price for grain sorghum, that's carried through from the past, I think has stayed at 395. So in terms of the program payment at the end, but again, for this marketing year, for the one we're going into, they won't get the payment until October 2021. They have to get all the way through the 2021 marketing year. But 395 is a tremendous price compared to the 370. So in terms of the support, it's a little weaker up front, for sorghum. But then on the backside, it's stronger in terms of reference prices for PLC. In terms of genetics, the grain sorghum industry has been working on that. They have breeders, et cetera, that have been going forth. They have had tough competition out here in the Western Corn Belt from the new drought-tolerant corn varieties that are aimed specifically at the same niche, non-irrigated cropland. So I think we have had strong sorghum yields when water's been available, and for a good while, when we planted a lot of grain sorghum in areas that we anticipated more risk to drought because it was when weather got tougher, we tend to respond better, hold up the bottom side of yields better than for corn. That's shifting a little bit now with these drought tolerant varieties. And I would say, out of all of this, my overall thought on sorghum, I know a number of people in those industries. I know they're national leaders. They, when sorghum has exports to China or wherever else, the main place in China, when that comes in strong, then it separates itself from corn. When they don't have that distinguishing demand characteristic, then it gets in and it competes with corn on a use basis. And so it's just very, very obvious, very plain to see that grain sorghum looks really well, really good when it's distinguished from corn, but when it's not distinguished from corn with that export demand, it competes very well, but it competes on value. And then it's kind of in a wrestling scrum as to its use and its profitability prospects, along with the predominant corn acreage.
Dave Chatterton, I'll follow up on this issue with you just a little bit, but turn it to the Chinese and Hong Kong's independence, the back and forth between the Trump administration and President Xi as it relates to trade relations with the United States. Do you believe that sorghum and other exportable commodities from the United States will be fulfilled in the Phase One trade agreement?
Well, Todd, I think that's the million-dollar question right now. And I'd have to say right now, I think the odds are that we probably will not get what I would call a full, or refer to as a full, fulfillment of the deal. I think China, you know, from their posturing and what they've done to date, while they've talked a good game, the action side of what they've done and the purchase side of what they've done continues to indicate that they're shying away from U.S. Origin. And even this week, we had we came back on Tuesday, we had some soybean sales announced to China for new crop that came on Friday of last week. But since that point, we've seen them actively buying South American and particularly Brazilian cargoes as far out as August and September, 10 or 12 cargoes already this week. And those numbers are well above what they could purchase U.S. Origin soybeans for. And that, to me, is an indication on the part of the Chinese crusher, Todd, that they're very, anxious about the outcome of the trade deal and whether they will actually be able to ship and execute and receive those beans from the U.S. if they do book them. And so, you know, everything that we've talked about or everything that's going on right now around Hong Kong and the parliamentary action that they've had over there, the Trump administration reaction to that, and the potential, revoking of this favored trade status with Hong Kong and the reaction to that, you know, the promised reaction, I should say, by China, all goes to that phase one agreement. And if you look at where we're at, we're very far away from getting to that year one commitment. And things have picked up here a little bit of late. Now, if they turn it on and for whatever reason hit the gas and say, hey, we're going to get there, we're going to have a very active last half of the marketing year, last half of the calendar year, purchase program that would include sorghum, I believe, and would include some ethanol, and would include some corn and some of the off products in addition to the soybeans. But I think the answer is definitely in question right now, and it's going to be kind of a key weekend here to see what the Trump administration reaction is to the recent moves here in Hong Kong.
Alan Dearden, corn had a pretty good day on Thursday, and it looks like it might finish out the month of May higher. That'd be good news, I suppose, for the marketplace.
Yeah, it would be good news. We did not take out the April low, so we don't have a reversal in corn. But we, you know, if we have a close here or even within a nickel of here, we'll be up for the week, up for the month. And I think that would be good news. And that suggests to me that $3 level that we tried a couple of times here in the nearby corn futures is looking more and more solid.
How solid do you think it is?
I think it's the low that we're going to be counting off of for at least going into the fall. It's possible that we could make a new take out that low. If we have a big crop, we could take out that low in the fall.
Is there much corn left to sell in your area?
Old crop, yes. And I think the logistics on the Illinois River are a wreck again. You know, nobody can load out anything because of high water. And we see ethanol plants are opening, are operating, but it's very difficult elsewhere to take corn right now.
And the river closes when for construction? July?
July 1, yeah. And most of these elevators are really anxious to empty out ahead of that. I'm talking about the inland elevators. And they're getting a little bit nervous about how many bushels they've got to move each week to get there by July 1, because we're only looking at four more weeks.
So I was thinking about that on the Illinois River, maybe the Upper Mississippi River, and what it might mean. As I was talking, I think, with Aaron Curtis in last week's Commodity Week program, and wondering whether, because the inland elevators would be looking to move their inventory to clean out now, simply because they are less likely to be able to move it easily later, does that mean cash basis will widen out, do you think, well before we get to July 1?
It may. We've not seen a big move in basis in the last 2 weeks' time here. And I think that is just a function of the river being too high to load barges.
What are you telling producers they ought to do?
Move it, move it, move it, move it. And people along this river system, people to the west of the Illinois River, I have some outlets going west that are on rail that are been considerably active bidding into the Peak and Peoria area. And those guys probably can be a little bit little slower in selling. But this area here around Morton and Peoria is going to be dependent on the Decatur market for summer movement.
Dave Chatterton, there are lots of things in the supply chain that have been a mess. This is just another one in addition to it. And then there are some areas out west that will, I think, remain, while we had a decent-sized crop, corn deficit. How do you see the summer unfolding?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, Todd. I think there's even, to add to that Illinois River discussion, there's been some discussion of potential delays in the shutdown or the project itself due to high water and timing and, you know, the number of people involved. And as Ellen, you know, you just mentioned, I mean, that time window is getting very short, but you know, very awkward position, if you will. I think any way we have to look at it, maybe the easiest way to view this is that if corn carryout is anywhere near where the USDA is projecting it, or let's say north of 3 billion or even approaching 3 billion, we've got an issue where there's going to be, you know, supply for an end user will really not be an issue. I mean, even in a deficit area, with the, you know, with a lower general economic pull on the transportation system, we would look for better efficiency out of the rail and out of the other alternative transportation modes, and certainly don't view that as a huge boon for basis. We view it as a lot of people trying to get through the door, and particularly if all those people run to the door at the same time, we're going to have some big problems. So I think it's a time to play defense, Todd. I mean, none of us enjoy that. I wish we were in a different situation and had, you know, $5 corn and, you know, $10 beans again, but dealt the hand that we're dealt with, and with the issue, you know, with the COVID-related macroeconomic slowdown, with the trade deal somewhat in question or in jeopardy, as well as just the size of the supply that's out there, not only in the U.S., but also globally. Even regional disruptions are going to be pretty short and pretty far and few in between.
Dan O'Brien, is there any experience from the western part of Kansas or the basis levels that you deal with, wherever that might be, that would give you some wisdom to pass on to folks in this part of the world, where generally we're open for business and have an outlet, or at least a couple of outlets for grain that make it flow pretty easily?
I want to follow up on what has just been talked about too. I think that the overall picture right now is for a moderate outlook. And then prices moving lower in the fall. And I appreciate all the comments so far. I would not disagree with all of them, but any of them. It does seem that, you know, our wild card would be some production issue. You know, and to be judicious, we're just counting that. You know, we're not planning on that. We're looking at protecting the downside for sure, because that's, again, a normal crop. And what's the chance of a normal crop? 75-80%, something like that. It just seems that that's where we're going. I would say that with regard to basis, as we look across the board here in Kansas right now, again, do we in Kansas view the futures as leading basis, or is the basis as leading futures? Kind of falling back. I'm an economist by training. They didn't really talk about that in all our textbooks, but it does make me wonder about the level of futures when I see strong basis across the board at most locations for corn. Of course, grain, sorghum, we have this specialized situation with exports coming in, but we really have pretty strong basis levels, at least decent basis levels, second strongest we've seen right now for wheat and also for soybeans. So from a Kansas perspective, we're bemoaning where the futures are at, wishing they were higher, but we've got some pretty good basis bids. So that must be indicative of some underlying demand in the market, or because we just have not collapsed to the loan rate. We still have enough demand pull in the country at these different users to give us at least some support. So I guess I'd invite any other thoughts on that. Is that Western Corn Belt perspective, does that hold in the Eastern Corn Belt as well?
Well, it seems to me that we've got this, quote, tight basis because we've got good underlying demand from multiple sectors that seem to be a ball in the air at one time or another ball in the air at another time. But add that farmers just plain aren't selling anything. And I think that's probably added to the basis strength for a lot of areas. I think the ability for farmers to hold on this long has been astounding to most analysts.
And with the recent payments coming out of the USDA, they'll have been rewarded for it. You know, given the amount unsold after January, that they'll be paid for. So interesting.
So the question then that this all begs is, when we get to the month of August and the Illinois River is closed and the bins are full and we have 97 million acres, if we do have that many acres of corn on hand, and we have a normal growing season, what happens?
Well, one of the things that will happen is that the in charge to hold crop for another year at an elevator will be sky high. That will be one thing that will happen. And I think we will also see basis probably falter some. Now, keep in mind that the Mid-South did not get a lot of corn planted this year. So the bushels for that August-Sep time slot at the Gulf are going to probably have to come from the Mississippi River, you know, from further north in the Midwest. So that may, you know, we may end up seeing farmer movement because basis improves to gather up those bushels. But here I would anticipate that we will see a sky-high in charge for holding crop over again.
I sure would not disagree in any way with what Ellen had said, and the information about what you said about the Southeast not having as much quantity of corn to come in and offset and to supply that late summer needs will be an interesting, I'll be polite and say it's be an interesting twist to the market. I would, Todd, the only thing I'd argue with on your scenario that you'd set up is I would hope the bins wouldn't be full. I'd hope they wouldn't have, that we would have moved something by that time. If they're truly full, then as David mentioned, you know, the 3 billion plus scenario with a sizable crop will be, it'll not have positive impact on the corn market. That's for sure. We'd be looking at, I'm not sure where we'd be, but who would be surprised if we'd be below $3 and wondering about where the loan rate might come in if we really do get, almost no movement through the summer and then a large crop coming on. It'd just be tough times.
Anything to add, Dave Chatterton?
Yeah, I would agree with what's been said here with Dan and Ellen. And, to add, Todd, I think, you have to look at this, at least on paper at this point, depending on how you want to slice it and dice it. We've got a 33-year high in our corn ending stocks number. And that's going to be a logistical challenge no matter how we look at it. We've also got no small amount of soybeans that we're carrying now, certainly lower than last year, but still by historical standards, a good chunk. When you add in the fact that we could have potentially, or it certainly looks like we're going to have an Illinois River closed down, where we're going to have, issues with the trade deal, and you've got a CME change in the storage rates, the amount of carry in the market and the way that the spreads are going to work versus the way they historically would, I think all points to potentially some pressure on basis. Now, part of that may be captured back by the producer if he can capture carry in the market and those spreads do widen out. What you're looking at, let's say, roughly speaking, a July East corn spread right now, that's around 25, 26 cents. Historically, that's a pretty wide or pretty attractive number. Now, if you calculate a full carry number based on the new storage, parameters from the CME, it needs to be closer to 40 cents. I'm not sure that we're going to get there, but that seems like the path of least resistance at this point. And for those who can carry corn on the farm, it looks very lucrative. For those who are going to need to use commercial storage and or DP, I think you need to be prepared for that ahead of time. Be talking to your elevator, be doing as much work as you can as soon as you can, be taking early bushels as opposed to late bushels to those facilities so that we can do that and keep yourself in the best spot.
Let's get a final word, I think, from each of you. Ellen Dearden, we'll start with you from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois.
There seems to be a lot of uncertainty over politics and political ramifications of China-U.S. trade deal, yes or no. So I would not be a person that wanted to hold on to physical crop for too terribly long. It's much easier to own it on paper.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Similar thing, Todd. I think you're at price levels that are certainly not attractive and are in some cases at or below break even. But on any kind of a modest rally, you need to be looking at marketing your physical crop. But in conjunction with that, your job as a producer, or your job as a financial fiduciary of your own P&O has changed a little bit. We've got this litany of government programs, starting with MFP last year, WIP and WIP Plus, EIDO, the Corona program. We're calculating some pretty attractive PLC numbers for this fall, assuming the prices stay down here, and harvesting revenue from all of those different buckets, plus the programs that are probably yet to come, it's going to be an important part of your job. It's not the funnest part of your job, I'm sure, but it goes to this, to the point of driving your revenue to a point where you are in a position to farm again and get an operating note again next year and keep things moving. So you also, just because that number doesn't look attractive on paper, we need to be looking at the other ways that we can pull that in. And in conjunction with making those sales, optionality, and particularly in the corn market right now with volatility low and absolute price low, something that you can enter for a very minor or a very, you know, known, a known charge up front, but also a very reasonable cost in our opinion.
And Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension.
It's almost a bridge too far, really, to think about next year already. But if we do end up with a large crop, really low price scenario for this fall, then to look ahead to 2021, I would wonder where our corn and soybean average prices will be for crop insurance purposes during that month of February. Again, look, literally the average for these 21 corn, November 21 soybeans during that critical time frame. And this year we've been propped up by 388 corn, which now looks like gold. When we got to 388 for the February average for these 20 corn, we were kind of grousing about it in Kansas. Gosh, it's not $4, low as it's been for a while. Well, now that's one of the best things we have going is that 388. We do come into next fall, this winter, and that February average is 330 or whatever it will be. Then that'll be a different picture in terms of the farm safety net. The reference prices I would anticipate would not change, but it'll be a lower crop insurance price for corn, for sorghum, and probably the other commodities be affected by that too. So I don't know that we haven't really thought about managing the risk of low crop insurance prices with any type of hedging, but it I guess if anything it just makes a person all that much more watchful of any opportunities, just as Dave and Ellen had said, in forward pricing, knowing that there's at least the potential, and more than just a small potential for a very low fall winter price scenario to come upon us, these grain markets, and to be cognizant, I guess, of the potential downside of that in terms of the safety net on into next year's crops.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program online at willag.org, willag.org, anytime you'd like. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden from Ag Review in Morton, Illinois, Dan O'Brien of Kansas State Extension in Colby, Kansas, and Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.